Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, February 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Take advantage of their Terra Luna Intel report on Telegram, which brings you the hottest news and updates on all things Terra each and every day. Find it using the link in the show notes. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, we have the Commonwealth Space Good Governance. Let's take a listen.
Okay, I think we can probably go ahead and get started from here. Thank you to all of our speakers, for joining, and everyone else for, coming in and listening. So I'm George. I'm the head of business and operations for Commonwealth. Commonwealth is a all-in-one DAO tool and platform helping projects like DYDX, Element Finance, and many others. I guess, we can first start off with, just doing a round of introductions. So, I'll kick it over to Will, who's next to me on my screen.
Awesome. Good morning, everyone. I'm Will. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Element Finance. We've been working on a new governance framework called the Council Protocol. So really excited to be here. Really excited for the conversation this morning.
David, you want to go next?
Hey, everyone. This is David Gogel. I'm the head of growth and operations at the DYDX Foundation. DYDX is one of the leading decentralized exchanges, currently providing perpetuals swaps. The DYDX Foundation's role is to foster decentralized governance and empower traders with powerful, transparent, and open crypto financial products. Ultimately, responsible for driving a lot of our community-led growth, development, and self-sustainability through various initiatives through the DYDX DAO. I'm excited for the conversation here.
Yeah, I guess I'll go next. Charles here, the Chief Operating Officer at Element. Previously was at the Maker Foundation as the Decentralized Governance Architect and one of the first mandated actors under the DAO as the MIP Editor. And yeah, I'm just really excited to talk more about governance today.
Hey guys, my name's Torgan. I'm in the grants committee at Pull Together DAO. And Pull Together is a DeFi protocol for prize savings. We try to provide grants to anyone that wants to build for Pull Together. And I think it's really important to set the right incentives for people to be able to contribute to a DAO in a meaningful way. And I'm excited to hear what you guys have to think about governance.
Hey guys, Calvin here from Impossible Finance. Nice to see you guys, Will, Charles. I think I also see Windra in the audience here from Element as well. Impossible is a decentralized incubator, launchpad, and also a swap. Got get to really see a lot of projects kind of grow and just build alongside a lot of cool DeFi primitives. So really happy to be on this panel with a bunch of other folks here that I think are moving a lot of cool things across all of DeFi. So I think especially when you know, many protocols like DYDX and Pull Together hold so much TVL already, you know, it's something where I think governance can't be taken very lightly. Is obviously funds are in the power of any, you know, admin role you have on a smart contract, right? So as we joke a lot about things with, you know, 0x Sifu or whatever it might be, on the flip side, I think this is why we're here to chat a bit today about how tools like Commonwealth can really be helpful in shaping, you know, how people set up DAOs to be as not just non-malicious, but protected from the worst possible cases that could ever happen when dealing with other people's funds. So really happy to be here today. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Yeah, really excited to, you know, chat. So, you know, general context. So overall, want to sort of chat about, you know, what are sort of decisions that go into like creating governance structures and, you know, especially like how did you guys sort of go about thinking about your different governance? And then, you know, we can go from there. Definitely want it to be, you know, pretty free-flowing conversation. So, you know, feel free to chime in or also, you know, throw out your own questions if you guys want along the way. Yeah, so I mean, I guess, you know, I'll sort of first kick it over to Will and or Charles. So, you know, I guess background, you know, you guys had a lot of say in the maker governance contracts and then, you know, are releasing your own frameworks for Element. So curious to hear a little bit about like how you guys approach governance and yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Go for it, Charles. No worries.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I mean, in terms of major considerations that we thought through while coming up with the Counselor protocol was, I mean, the first off is, of course, that every governance system is different and some projects do require quite heavy participation, some don't. It's really case dependent. So I think that based on something like no kind of governance model will essentially be perfect for any project is that you got to build one with flexibility and modularity in place so that when the system can actually adapt to other projects, you can kind of allow them to take little bits of it from what they want, such as potentially like voting vaults. We'll probably get into that later, but they might not want to do the GSC model for the Governance Steering Council. So building a governance protocol that's modular and flexible is really important, especially with constantly evolving projects. I mean, there's always room for improvement. There's no doubt about that. So having the governance system at the base level just be flexible for experiments and continuous improvement is really important. I think the other consideration that really stood out for me was on scalability. So you really do want to maximize the number of decisions that can happen in a given period. But at the same time, you want them to be representative of the community, which is why we did come up with the GSC model so that people can actually delegate their voting power, but at the same time, trust these people who have kind of campaigned and showed vision for the protocol and allow them to kind of push decisions forward as well. And yeah, so I guess in summary, the main two considerations were keeping the system modular and flexible and also just putting the community forward and prioritizing scalability and decision-making there. But I'll pass it off to Will for that. Anything else I missed?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I remember talking to Charles like about a year ago when we were starting Element. And, you know, one of the things that I was saying is, you know, everything that we build, we want to touch and sort of create a guide for the space to move forward, try some new things, innovate a bit, take the learnings that we all have from working on other protocols and working on other things in the space. And so I remember talking to Charles and just being like, let's put out a new governance framework. Let's experiment. Let's see what we can do. And, you know, let's hopefully, you know, move the space forward and see others, you know, build on top of that. And so some of the key pieces of, you know, what we've pursued and what we've built sort of try and solve a few different issues. So one of them is decreasing plutocracy, right? So big whales having, you know, large, overwhelming say in the protocol. Another is increasing voter involvement. So if you look on average between, you know, various protocols in the space right now, voter involvement can be, you know, sub 5% on a regular basis. It stays pretty low. And so you sort of think, you know, what are the reasons for this? How can you improve that? And so a lot of the structure that we built look to improve both those areas. So there's sort of two built-in innovations that I think are really, really cool. So one is, you know, Charles was talking about it, is the Governance Steering Council. This is basically a built-in delegation system within the protocol. So anyone in the protocol can go through, they delegate their vote, they can self-delegate, that means they'll be involved, or they can, you know, delegate to another actor that they trust to make good decisions. And the Governance Steering Council is basically the top delegators in the system, and they can, you know, in real time be moved or added. And they get, you know, certain additional permissions to, you know, streamline the process and make it efficient. And it also allows for, you know, smaller voters who don't want to spend the gas and sit there and vote on every issue to be able to sort of delegate that to someone, you know, someone they believe in. The second thing, and this one is what, like, gets me so hyped up and so pumped. And I sort of call these governance Lego pieces. and so these are the voting vaults. And basically, voting vaults are these like new construct that we're introducing. It's a new primitive for governance systems. And essentially, what they are, they're contracts that define a strategy or define which customizes what a vote means. So, to give you an example, you know, normally sort of the typical model that you see, you know, in different DAOs and different governance systems is you have, you know, one token, one vote. You know, you have more tokens, you have a higher vote, you know, in the system. Some of them apply some locking strategies, different things like that, that can basically boost some of those votes, other ways that boost that as well. But there's so much more you can do. So like one of the biggest issues is, and this affects, you know, voter involvement. One of the biggest issues is a user, you know, sort of takes their governance token, goes and collateralizes it on Compound or Aave, you know, one of those platforms. And then they have no real incentive, you know, at this point to go into governance and vote unless there's, you know, a major, major issue they really, really care about. Then they can, you know, basically settle their vault, go through, take their collateral out and go and vote. And this is actually, you know, one of the biggest blockers for, you know, involvement in governance. And so what voting vaults does is you can define what a vote means. So you can say someone who has a position in an A token or a C token, basically who's an LP in Compound or Aave, collateralizing Compound or Aave, still gets a vote. You could say, you know, you have an LP vault where, you know, someone who's providing liquidity, let's say on an AMM or a different system, you know, still gets a vote. You can even take it to, you know, there's a number of other things. You can even take it to, you know, people who, let's say in our protocol, there's principal tokens. You could say people who are LPing with principal tokens can still have a say. Or you could have like an L2, L1 synthesis vault where people who are in L2 who don't want to bring their tokens over to L1 can also vote. And so this, we sort of call this as sort of solving the opportunity cost of governance, where you can still gain the benefits of, you know, holding the token and looking at yield opportunities and various things in the market. But you can still also vote in the system. And so these two things, there's, you know, I would say there's a third thing we're looking at, which is also incentivizing people to vote, which I'll share a little bit more later. But that's, you know, that's sort of an overview of, you know, what we went into thinking about this and sort of some of the innovations that are there.
That's amazing stuff. Yeah, I mean, really, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of impacts for, I guess, projects as they're looking to switch over. So especially like as you looked at sort of addressing voter engagement and reducing like plutocracy, you know, how do you guys sort of evaluate, you know, the broader landscape of some of the top voting contracts? And, you know, this one's for the full crowd. So, you know, there's like Snapshot, Compound, Aave, and, you know, we have some people that have chosen these options, or, you know, even help build them. So curious how you guys sort of think about those trade-offs and, you know, maybe which of the different options do it better than others.
Yeah, I think I'll chime in on this because I think the plutocracy problem is definitely a pretty big one. I think recently people were talking about Justin Sun borrowing a bunch of comp to vote through one of his assets. I think it was like TUSD. For us at Impossible, we're currently using actually a bit of quadratic voting. So there is some sort of tapering of large whale votes, but we still don't know if, at least we know for sure it's not a complete solution. But still kind of open-minded and definitely want to hear your guys' thoughts here. Because we do see that, you know, there's definitely still a lot of whales that still will try to influence some votes on different topics. So I think most recently we asked like our community, what genre of project do you want to see next on Impossible's Launchpad? And then we also maybe complicated things a bit by giving it multiple choices. So you could pick things like, you know, GameFi, multi-chain, whatever kind of broad categories. And so users could actually have a ranked choice along with this type of quadratic voting. So I think we'll see the results by the end of this poll. You know, to be honest, I don't exactly know how it'll turn out yet. I think both GameFi and multi-chain are pretty popular choices right now. But then there could always be someone else that kind of pops up, right? So I think that, you know, to be honest, we're still trying to figure out best ways to handled these types of places where plutocracies could significantly harm the kind of fairness of the governance process. So definitely want to hear more from you guys as well.
So if you use quadratic voting, isn't a Sybil attack a problem where the whales just split their funds into a bunch of different wallets?
Yeah, so that's definitely the biggest issue. But fortunately, I think our actual launchpad itself does require KYC. So we can actually pretty easily detect if someone's trying to split funds to manipulate a vote in this manner. So I think for now, it is somewhat solved. At least our KYC procedures are relatively strict. But of course, I think we can also do something where we give more weight to people that have participated in larger amounts in past launchpads. But yeah, it's still a work in progress.
Yeah, I think quadratic voting is really interesting. And in the future, I think definitely we'd like to experiment more with it, maybe even at the governance steering council's level. But in terms of plutarchy and reducing the effects of whales on swinging votes and whatnot, I think I do want to kind of just talk about the governance steering council and why we've created this. So the governance steering council, I mean, you can think of it as a group of elected people who kind of have authority over certain areas of the protocol, whether that's help managing the on-chain process, putting proposals directly on-chain, spending some of the treasury. The general point there is that they'll have some sort of authority over their kind of in their role, as opposed to someone who's kind of elected and has to go through all the same governance processes. But the way we've kind of designed this to reduce any plutarchy and whatnot is that anyone who passes a certain delegation threshold essentially moves on to this governance steering council. And once they're on there, they have one vote for each member. So it's everyone has one vote, and essentially they can kind of propose different proposals forward. And essentially they're not actually passing these proposals because there is a voting period that allows everyone in the community to kind of come and vote after that. But by having essentially its own built-in silo resistance, it does mitigate the effects of plutarchy. And then in the future, if you do want to try certain experiments with like quadratic voting at the GSC level, that's something definitely we want to consider as well. But I'm curious to hear if anyone has thought about any other ways to mitigate the effects of whales in voting.
Just to hear how TYDX has sort of thought through this, David, I know especially you guys do have some high quorum limits and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, we've taken a slightly different, I think, approach here where, I guess, similar to Uniswap, like we have just multiple stages in our governance process. So, for anything to pass, we need, you know, communication via Commonwealth and rough consensus there. then there's like a DYDX request for comment that requires a snapshot vote with a certain set of minimum requirements for that to pass. And then most decisions actually require an on-chain vote with different types of executor contracts with different thresholds based on the importance or the scope of the decision and the outcome. So on the one hand, you know, this creates a lot of process, but I think it does provide for a lot of consensus building over time. And, you know, our governance process is relatively new. We launched in July of last year. And so it's definitely an evolving system that's designed to be flexible and modified over time as we learn kind of new lessons. But, you know, I think the plutocracy risk is very real. You know, a lot of our investors have locked tokens. They can still participate in governance more broadly. But I think I've been generally encouraged where we see obviously a lot of participation with snapshot votes because there's no gas fees associated with it and anyone can participate. And then a pretty significant drop off for on-chain votes in terms of getting a lot of users to participate in the vote and spend gas fees, which is definitely like a pretty significant barrier to entry. I think for us, you know, we've been, we forked Aave's governance contracts and added some bells and whistles, but personally very excited about this concept around delegation and kind of how that can catalyze like more more fairness or handing you know, more voting power into the hands either of subject matter experts or people who are really engaged with the protocol. And so, you know, our token holders can either delegate proposing power and or voting power to a given delegate. And so we've been spending a lot of time thinking through how do we launch, you know, a formal delegation program to try to get tokens into the hands of people who will more actively participate in governance more broadly. And then in terms of how do we prevent kind of Sybil attacks, you know, with a snapshot vote and an on-chain vote, basically there's a time delay between when the proposal is submitted and when the snapshot is taken for actual voting. You know, so it's about 24 hours. It's 24 hours for snapshot polls and then also 24 hours for on-chain votes. And, you know, in some ways that gives, you know, whales the opportunity to purchase additional tokens if they really want to sway the vote in some way or another within that 24-hour period. But then it's also an opportunity for, you know, the rest of the community to really identify these weird movements or just one-off events and hopefully have enough time to mobilize in the opposing direction as well. So again, I don't think any system is perfect. It's really hard to design something that's both like fair yet inclusive for the broader community. And ultimately, I think we're all just still in this experimentation phase. But I think a lot of what everyone else has mentioned around quadratic voting or even the concepts behind the GSE are definitely super interesting and something that we're looking at as well.
You mentioned inclusivity around the broader community. So this is something that actually really, really interests me as well. So you sort of see in various DAOs, there might be people who contribute a lot. There might be someone who's putting up, you know, PRs regularly to the repo. You might have a community member who's really, really involved, but they may not have the ability to gain a strong enough stake, at least initially, in the protocol. And so, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about in the long term is, you know, how do you customize and give, you know, members of the GitHub organization, members of the community and different things like that, a voting share that can, you know, also have some competition with people who are also staked in the protocol and holding holding the tokens. And so this is sort of, I was talking earlier about, you know, voting vaults and these, you know, new Lego pieces where you can basically define a strategy and define, you know, what a vote means and customize that. And so One of these that's really interesting, and this is more of like a long-term thing and something we've been thinking about because there's some, you know, technical difficulties here. But it would be interesting to introduce, you know, an identity verified vault. And so this is essentially where you can verify your digital identity as a unique person. And when you do this, there's various ways that you can essentially link, you know, that unique digital identity to, you know, a GitHub account, you know, a community account, you know, various things like that. And there's ways you can do that also without, you know, doxing and other aspects as well. And, you know, we're actually, that's something we can go into as well at some point. But if you have this and you can sort of begin, you know, breaking down this construct of, you know, one token, one vote, and really look at it as in, you know, someone who is contributing to the protocol, you know, gets a vote. They might not have the same, you know, financial capability to go ahead and have a large, you know, stake in the protocol, but they're actively contributing, and maybe the stake that they have gets multiplied because of that. And so there's a lot of cool things you can do to sort of boost the involvement and boost the voting power of people who are actively contributing, who are what essentially we call value bringers to the protocol, but may not be sitting on, you know, a large pool of tokens or something like that.
Yeah, I absolutely want to see more stuff there, like just creating a more inclusive governance system, because I mean, some of the biggest contributors may just be people in your Discord, or they may just be people in the forums, and actually giving them some sort of voting power through some sort of score is just, I think, the way to do it. The actual way to aggregate things, like let's say there's someone who may have governance tokens, they are active participants in Discord, in the forums, they push on GitHub, aggregating a score for each of those and totaling it up and actually assigning voting power to that could be a very interesting way to do it. And definitely voting vaults are a way to do that. It's just a matter of figuring out the like aggregation and different scoring mechanisms. I know way back when I was working at Maker, the team was experimenting with a project called SourceCred, and they incentivized governance participation in the forums. And that's the only really like governance experimentation I've seen in terms of actually incentivizing these participants. And I think that is leading me to the point where, is it a mistake that projects solely focus on liquidity mining, and shouldn't there be some sort of push forward for incentivization of governance? And I'm not just saying like incentivizing votes or delegation, but actually going in and incentivizing the way people participate in the forums, creating proposals. If it's successful, maybe they should get some sort of boost. But actually looking and experimenting with ways of incentivizing the actual people who govern the DAO. And I think that it's just a no-brainer to start like pushing those forward, because ultimately if the DAO isn't succeeding, like the project's going to fail. And thinking about liquidity mining solely is a little kind of short-term thinking. And of course, it's great for many reasons, but incentivizing governance is probably like the long-term motivation that a lot of projects should think about.
Yeah, so it's like there's multiple dimensions to the value in a protocol, right? So there's people who are, you know, super involved in the governance aspect. There's people who are actually, you know, providing liquidity, helping build the liquidity and pools for the protocol to actually, you know, run and survive. There's also the people who are, you know, actively in the community, writing posts in the forums. There's developers, open source contributors, you know, pieces like that. And so you sort of think, you know, you take all those different routes, and current liquidity mining structures seem to prioritize people who are just providing capital in a system. And so like, how do you sort of level that playing field, right? And so that's something that like we've been thinking to no end about. And so we had mentioned, right, like one of those is the voting vaults construct. Another one that we've been playing with, and you know, I won't release too much alpha here, but another one we've been thinking about is sort of how do you gamify and like incentivize, you know, that involvement. How, you know, how does that then extend to a reputation that is built over time? Pieces like that. And so that's one thing like we're gonna sort of, you know, experiment with. And this is sort of you know, I love the idea of sort of the you know, merging of GameFi, DeFi, NFTs, And governance all in one, because it's a lot you can do. And there's, you know, a lot of reputational aspects and FOMO aspects you can do, you know, for people who want to sort of create that reputation and build their place in the protocol and governance system as well.
Yeah, I think on the gamification side, I totally agree that it still seems like participating in governance is like a chore for the people that really care about it the most. And there's like an opportunity to build a better product to really drive kind of more engagement on the governance side more broadly. You know, I think one thing that we've been spending a lot of time thinking about at kind of DYDX is we recently launched, or DYDX Trading recently launched like an NFT collection that really serves as a way for users to earn NFTs for using or trading on the protocol. The initial distribution was kind of set up in three tiers, where the first tier was actually reserved for anyone who had actually voted on any proposal on chain, and really recognizing and elevating people who have participated in governance before. And I think that was pretty innovative. And again, it's trying to elevate and recognize that participating in governance is hard. And people should be compensated for putting the time in there. You know, I think that the foundation now has, you know, a pretty substantial amount or allocation of these hedgy NFTs. And we're also spending a lot of time thinking about how do we distribute those to the community in a gamified way to really drive broadly. So that's something we're spending a lot of time thinking about. The other is really around reputation. I think source cred is super interesting. The other one that I've spent a lot of time thinking about is Coordinate, which is, you know, basically communities can provide, you know, basically rank other community members over a given epoch based on their perceived contribution. I think the real challenge here in kind of reputation base is like, it's easy when the data is on chain or it's verifiable on social or on GitHub. But the real issue is like, how do you actually connect all of those pieces? And for a lot of the initiatives that we're excited about, like, you know, we're trying to, it's not just technical talent that is valuable to the growth of a DAO. There's a lot of business development, marketing, design, other types of kind of skill sets that we're trying to reward, and how do we actually identify who's providing real value in those other measures that aren't easily or quantifiable through kind of traditional sources, and how do we come up with like an objective score reputation for people to rank each other with. It turns out, you know, I think the NFTs that we launched and the hedgies are actually like a pretty good way to proxy that, because ultimately there's only 4,200 hedgies that are going to get earned. And so, you know, that ultimately potentially becomes a proxy of who are the most engaged people in the community who have been rewarded through various segments. And it's a way for people to, you know, social proof with each other. But I do think more broadly, you know, there's definitely better tooling that can be built around reputation or scoring as a way to identify where to channel voting power to the people that are most active within the community.
Yeah, I really think that, I mean, the NFT and engaging participation and community contributions and rewarding them with that is really cool. And like, it can definitely be like an aggregate to the whole score for an identity piece, like showing how they participated and like through badges. I think there are a couple of projects that do badges on the forums to like indicate if how many times you voted, how many times you've commented on things and all of that. And there definitely are drawbacks to like things like source cred. I mean, just like you said, it's really easy to calculate the amount of effort or like the amount of PRs, the amount of commits, the amount of posts you put on Discord, but it's really hard to essentially qualitatively assess it for, I mean, it could just be like small little comments on GitHub or like just like the WEN token post on Discord are the forms. And it's really hard to kind of differentiate the quality between an actual contribution. I think that's the biggest issue when you're looking at reputation systems and scoring. But back to the whole idea of like gamifying governance, I mean, of course, there's a lot of trade-offs here. Do you really want to gamify something that's like helping manage a $1 billion treasury? And I think it's more about gamifying the community experience and really building that, because that's the hardest part about DAOs, is like building a strong community that cares. So incentivizing and growing a community with like things like NFTs or gamification on some sort of level. But actually gamifying governance, I'm not sold on. I think you can make governance more easily participated like in by having delegation, representative democracy, and things like that. But I'm not sold on the whole gamification of governance yet. But obviously I'm open-minded.
Yeah, so I actually agree with Charles. So you know, we're you know, sort of launching some things, and again, I won't say too much. You know, people will know about this soon. But it's pretty cool, it's pretty fun, is all I'll say. And basically it's, you know, my initial hypothesis or theory is the gamification side is exactly what Charles said, is more about building community. Building sort of FOMO is, you know, I'm, you know, the bigger contributor here. I've leveled myself up. I get to, you know, do this and exchange this for that. I get to be involved in, you know, this marketplace, things like that. And it's sort of like this, you know, sort of the way that I look at it is, you know, you look, for example, at like Fortnite, right? And people get different skins, you know, in Fortnite. It's like my, you know, classic example. But they provide zero actual value to the game. But you get to sort of brag, you know, about this skin, this thing that I've gotten, this thing that I've leveled up to. And there's sort of that, you know, that aspect where, you know, you get to build your reputation that way. And so my initial hypothesis is that's sort of the way to go, is do it solely from a community front. I've heard a lot of like, you know, other opinions that have sort of come to me and said, well, you could also use that for, you know, leveling up and giving someone, you know, an increased proportion in voting share in the system. And I think, you know, that could be interesting, but that scares me, right? Like, first I want to see, you know, how, you know, these new primitives and constructs, you know, that we're doing work, you know, without having that, you know, leveled system tied to the gamification side. And then maybe we learn something. Maybe there is the proper way to merge it that doesn't sort of skew the system, you know, and we can get more data on. So that's sort of my you know, my thought on it is you make it fun, you incentivize participation with it, but it's more related to the community versus related to actually having, you know, a stronger vote or things like that.
So at Pull Together, we actually do use Coordinate. And I think it's the best way we've been able to come up with a score that, you know, rewards actual meaningful contributions over just spam, which I think is a difficult problem. Because in Coordinate, everyone just votes for who they think have been bringing value. And then on average, it works out pretty decently, I think. But there are, of course, problems where, like, if someone does something really visible, you would get a lot of rewards. And if someone's like doing some really important, I don't know, backend work that no one ever actually gets to see, then that can go under. So I think that's a challenge. And then also in Pull Together, in the Discord, we have a really cool culture of tipping people. So if someone like contributes something cool or brings some cool thoughts, helps people out, people are really quick to tip each other in pool tokens. And we've even set up what we call the welcome team, which is just a couple of like core community members that have an allocation of pool tokens that they can tip out to new members if they do something cool. Like if someone joins the Discord and like starts helping out someone immediately by answering their questions, then they can get like a small tip by that welcome team. And I think that really, you know, helps also continue this culture of like being helpful and appreciating each other.
Torgan, I think that's super cool. I guess I'm curious, what service do you use for tipping on Discord? Anyone in particular you recommend?
Yeah, we use the CollabLand Discord bot that works really well.
Awesome.
Actually, on the note of pull together, one thing I really love about the way you've approached governance is the proposal process and having essentially a UI that is more user-friendly and not necessarily like through GitHub or through the forums. And it allows people to essentially make proposals a lot quicker. Like you have drop-down for specific contracts that will interact with it and what the proposal will do. And it makes submitting proposals a lot easier. But I do have a question on how that smooth user experience has resulted in potentially like more garbage proposals coming forward. Like, have you faced any kind of spam attacks with proposals coming in through and like unable to manage that? Or has it overall just been like a great experience?
So that UI is actually not used very much. The way that proposals usually happen is that there is a post on the governance forum. And then once we have our rough consensus, then like one of the delegates that has enough votes, because we do have a minimum amount of tokens required for creating an on-chain vote, then someone just creates it through the UI. So the users of that UI are actually usually not the people that come up with ideas. It's the delegates that have enough votes.
That's really interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think that whole kind of workflow is something I've been really thinking hard about. Is like there's a huge mix between proposal frameworks throughout of DeFi and decentralized governance, and there's many that are like very complex, have a lot of processes and very extremely like thought out, and then there's ones that are very simple and straightforward, but a lot of the complex ones have way more proposals come through, and like in a way there is like that security vibes, like security and having people kind of go through all these like hoops kind of prevents those garbage proposals from coming through because there's a lot of things they have to do. And I am curious to hear like if anyone has any like strong thoughts on what the best proposal framework is on these projects. And like if you could change anything or make things easier, what would you do?
Yeah, happy to jump in here. I mean, I think not to shill Commonwealth, but I think, you know, when we looked at the landscape of just governance tools, you know, 6 months ago, we just thought it was like a very fragmented experience, right? Like there was discussions happening on Discord, on Discourse, voting on Snapshot, voting on on-chain proposals, and just like information was siloed in a lot of ways, and it just added a lot of complexities for your average person to be able to participate in the governance process. And so, you know, I think we were one of the first major protocols to sign up for Commonwealth and effectively like try to build the product with them to make it a more unified experience where we have discussion forums and then the ability to create snapshot proposals natively on Commonwealth. And then also the ability to create on-chain proposals natively on Commonwealth. And I think that's certainly a step in the right direction. You know, the other piece is there is Sudan, you know, users can sign up with their username. They can link kind of various identities or social media. And then there's persistence of identity across, you know, all stages of the governance process, which I think is actually really critical around just building credibility within the system. But, you know, overall, there's definitely more work to be done to really improve, I think, the product, but it's certainly a very like positive step in the right direction. You know, ultimately, one thing we've talked about is really trying to implement templates, right? Because the reality is, again, to submit a snapshot, like that's relatively easy, but to be able to actually submit an on-chain vote and do a smart contract call to change parameters on the smart contract, like really you need an engineer or someone who understands how all of that works to be able to do that. And, you know, I think in some regards, just being able to create reusable templates where Again, you know, for us, there's maybe 5 or 10 decisions that like are probably the most common types of decisions that will come up, you know, relatively frequently. And so, you know, our thinking is how do we create a more streamlined process where anyone can kind of reuse what's been done before and then provide, do that in kind of a more seamless manner. You know, I think to your point, that may result in kind of lower quality proposals, but that's where, you know, going through having kind of multiple steps in the governance process, you know, hopeful and kind of minimum requirements to submit a snapshot proposal and even higher requirements to submit an on-chain proposal, you know, the lower quality ideas kind of just get stuck in the forums unless there's real significant buy-in from the community or someone with a larger token stake.
That's actually one of the areas I want to push forward some experiments on is using some sort of conviction voting style prioritization scheme in like forums, for example. So, you have tons of proposals coming in, but there's only a few ways to really prioritize them. And like, that's if there's like a sub DAO team that like kind of pushes forward governance and like selects certain things. There's built-in kind of review processes with governance frameworks and proposal frameworks. So like each proposal has to go through like a 1 week review to like make sure that like changes can be updated and like maybe a freeze period for like a week before that proposal can go up for like voting because it's been changed. But having some sort of style of like conviction voting where like there's continuous voting on proposals on which to prioritize is, I think, a really great way for the community to kind of really show what proposals want to be put forward and what the community overall basically needs next. So having like continuous voting on like different proposals, it really shows which ones suck and like should never be put up for like a snapshot and then on chain. And then like if there's a huge amount of support for one, it should go right up for a snapshot and things like that.
Yeah, I love the idea of conviction voting. I think that's really, really cool. Let me, I actually want to ask a question as well. So, you know, Yearn sort of put forward that governance 2.0, you know, post and proposal. And one of the interesting things that it sort of came down to is, you know, there's all these delegated committees, right? There's, you know, a treasury delegated committee. There's, you know, there's a committee for events. You know, there's, I think, somewhere around 8 of them, maybe more. I forget the exact amount. And so that sort of, you know, begins showing as you scale a DAO, you know, you start getting into this area where, you know, delegation may not be like one size fits all, like just one delegated group may not have the same expertise to handle engineering, you know, product iteration ideas as someone who's managing a treasury or someone who's managing, you know, decisions around community or marketing incentives. And so, you know, I sort of think, you know, this is something as the DAO scales more and more, this is what you think about. And this is something like me and Charles have been thinking about. You know, what, and I'm curious what you guys have thought, like, what are some ways to handle that and sort of create committees that, you know, in a decentralized way and is, you know, elected through governance and through the community can really, you know, sort of have that expertise. And these would be like the subcommittees or sub-delegated groups.
Yeah, so I think that's really important to not have every decision that happens be part of the main governance. You know, like in the grants committee at Pool Together, the whole point of the grants committee is that we have autonomy to spend our budget however we want. Because, you know, I think we've had like 100 grants applications or something like that. And if there had been a governance vote for every single one of them, that just wouldn't have made sense. So I think you do need these subcommittees that have autonomy and, you know, can make decisions for themselves, at least to like a specific scope. And then you just need like a lot of transparency, from those subcommittees, to make sure that, you know, everyone knows what they're up to and, kind of how they came to the decisions that they've made so that they don't start becoming, you know, these like sheltered groups that nobody knows really what they do or why. So I think it's kind of a question of, you know, you need specialized groups and then you need them to be accountable, because I think that's the only way to scale. You can't actually have every decision made by everyone. That's just too inefficient of a model.
What are some ways, you know, that you've seen or you've thought about to hold that accountability? So not just the votes being out there, you know, in public, but also how do you replace that committee member, or how do you replace that entire committee if they start, you know, making really questionable decisions, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, this is something we're spending a lot of time thinking about. I think, you know, actually, Charles, you're probably most familiar with this, but like, I think Maker's like core units framework is probably like at least like the best way that people have come up, like approached this solution. Obviously, it has its own set of trade-offs, but, you know, I think ultimately the accountability piece is like the hardest one to nail in kind of a fully trustless manner. Part of that could be, you know, trying to provide kind of transparent KPIs or metrics that, you know, holds the core unit or the sub DAO or their fluid working group kind of accountable for, and then coming up with some form of like novel like payments, whether it's streaming or whether it's milestone based or something like that. You know, I think right now it's mostly just like recurring monthly payments that are administered by, you know, a central, like a multi-sig of elected people. But I think trying to tie something more towards like measurable KPIs or outputs and have it kind of more directly tied to performance is something that we're thinking about, and I think would be interesting and value add for the space.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I do really love the MakerDAO's core unit model. And I mean, I do hope to see that the core units onboarded will have some sort of authority over their area of expertise, like be able to like spend part of the treasury or like push proposals kind of more streamlined forward, as opposed to going through like the same governance process that everyone else has to go through. It takes a lot of time. It makes like operation a little slow. But I mean, when we were thinking about the GSC, like we thought about, I mean, there's a couple ways to essentially elect these people. Like you can do like literal elections, let's say like quarterly, once a year, some random number. But having that election process really takes away a lot from like focusing on governance and making decisions. And it's a lot harder to offboard someone when they've been elected and like they're here for like 4 months or half a year. So that's why we decided to do the delegation threshold. So if you're delegated a certain amount of voting power, you essentially go on to the GSC and you're there, and you have to be transparent. You have to be communicating with your decisions, or else people might stop delegating to you. And essentially, if you're not doing all this communication, it kind of shows that there might be a disconnect to the general community sentiment and you'd fall off. So going with the rolling basis, kind of king of the hill style for the GSC made a whole lot of sense. But with actual DAO teams that are kind of doing work and providing services to the DAO, I don't think that's the method to go, because you kind of need them in that position to be doing this work and making milestones. And if people just kind of undelegate to them and they stop doing that, like they'll stop getting paid and they'll stop doing their work. So I think maybe like the election style a couple times a year, or kind of like the bankless style like seasons could be a way to go about that. But I'm definitely like looking to hear more experiments and seeing things more battle tested from like Maker, Gitcoin, and ENS, for example.
Yeah, I think elections work pretty well. Especially if you have like an entire group, let's say a working group that can all hold each other accountable. I think that's really where a lot of the resilience is coming from, is that like if if there's one member of the group that's not performing, then the other people are going to notice. You know, it's not just everyone only looking out for themselves. And then also, I think, like, generally, you can just be transparent on the things that you're doing and have that kind of be the base layer. And then if anything changes, you know, if you stop being transparent, people can complain about that. Or if you are transparent and you're doing things people don't like, then people are going to notice as well and then can vote you out.
Yeah, I think it's tough to figure out like the actual model on offboarding like people for poor work or malicious behavior. But like when a system allows anyone to like make a proposal to offboard, like let's say like a core unit or like a sub DAO team, then it makes it a little more difficult. So maybe it could be something like the GSC only is allowed to offboard a DAO team based on their performance and like an open public communication, or other DAO teams can propose to offboard other DAO teams and something like that, as opposed to anyone. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting conversation.
I mean, how do you guys feel about like time-based offboarding? Right? Like there's something to be said that in, you know, in democracies, like there's always a cap and a re-election for, you know, for certain individuals to participate in governance. Like in some ways shouldn't, you know, I don't know if it's 4 years or 5 years, it could be much shorter based on like the functional need. But I think it's an interesting concept that like, you know, maybe there is some time boundedness that's required for accountability in kind of the ultimate manner.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to go about it, is like having kind of terms, and if like their work's good and everyone agrees, they can kind of vote them back in for another term. And at the same time, you do want to have that kind of process for offboarding in a quick manner if they are doing something malicious or terrible. So like having a balance between those two, I think, is probably the best way to go about it. But I'm sure we'll see a lot more experiments regarding DAO teams. One thing I do want to see is more standardization of like calling them sub DAOs or DAO service providers. It's like you see all across the industries, like there's the core units, there's the pods, there's the like sub DAO teams. So like having some sort of standardization around like DAO structures would be nice. But of course, that's a lot to ask because everyone likes creating their own names and terms for their projects.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would also be great to see like pods or working groups actually work cross DAOs, right? Like I think you're starting to see a class of service providers that are becoming kind of functional experts in their domain and leveraging that to build across multiple protocols. And I think that's probably a trend that we'll continue to see. You know, I think one group or company that comes to mind is Reverie. You know, Reverie launched, mobilized the DYDX community to allocate the equivalent of like $6 million to fund the DYDX grants program. And then they really led kind of the whole governance cycle, recruited a multi-sig committee, and then now are administering kind of that program fully independently. And I know that, you know, they've had experience with other protocols and are also in the process of probably trying to launch something similar elsewhere. So, you know, I think that's one example, but, you know, we would love to see whoever designed, you know, the treasury diversification proposals on other protocols to really come in and apply a lot of those lessons learned to our governance system. And I think, you know, as people and groups start to build a track record, I think we're going to see a lot more of these core units or working groups or sub DAOs or pods really be functional across multiple protocols. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Definitely agree there with all the great work that Reverie is doing, and you know, similarly excited to start to see that we'll call it business model of, you know, really high value, high focus contributors participating in more DAOs. So we are, you know, it's been an hour now. I do want to be, you know, conscious of everyone's time. So if we want to go maybe like one last loop around. I'm curious to hear, you know, what you guys are like most interested in seeing come out of DAOs during 2022.
Yeah, I'll go first. I've talked about it to no end during this call. For me, I sort of want to see governance Lego pieces be built. That means tooling, voting vaults, all these things that we talked about. And so, you know, let's say you're launching a new DAO, launching a new project. Part of that, you want, you know, to define, you know, collateralized positions as having a vote, Discord contributors, people on L2, you have a synthesis vault. You want to, you know, add a vesting vault for the team that's at, you know, let's say a 10% multiplier. That way, you know, you're decentralized, you know, from the go. You can sort of pick those Lego pieces, situate that, and then deploy. And so I sort of want to see it become much more seamless to launch all these pieces and see the ecosystem be built around this more and more, and sort of come towards one, you know, one strong framework in the space. And yeah, super, super excited about seeing, you know, where that can go.
I guess, you know, I'm really excited for DAOs to get more aggressive on spending. You know, I think there's what, $10-20 billion sitting in community treasury funds, and like even the largest grants programs are spending, you know, less than 0.5% of that treasury on general growth or tooling or operations. And ultimately, if we're going to compete with centralized players, we just need to spend a lot more and invest and experiment. So I'm really excited, hopefully, for just much more aggressive spending and experimentation and building around, you know, DAOs as a category and the whole BitaDAO vertical. I think there's a lot of room for improvement there, but I think it's something that we're starting to see more activity in.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see that as well. I think that, I mean, I would personally like to see more DAO-to-DAO relations, more DAO-to-DAO proposals, DAOs working together on treasury diversification, and also participating in each other's governance. Like, if two protocol DAOs are working together in terms of technical integrations, like, why shouldn't they have some sort of like vote in the governance systems and share that, because they're partners and they're like stakeholders? So I think seeing more DAOs work together and through governance proposals or whatnot is something I think will be happening this year. And in general, I always like to see more experiments in governance. I think during DeFi summer, we saw like a kind of lack of innovation just due to like the ease of using like the snapshot and multi-sig method. And a lot of governance innovation was kind of put on hold because everything was blowing up in DeFi. And yeah, on that note, I think just seeing more incentives just outside of liquidity mining, like really thinking deeply about how we want to incentivize governance users and participation is something I want to see more of this year as well. But yeah, thanks again for hosting, George. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation.
I think one of the things we only touched on shortly is that gas fees are actually a pretty big problem, both for voting fees, but also like just buying a governance token on Uniswap on mainnet is super expensive, right? So a lot of people are actually priced out of using DEXs if they're trying to trade small amounts. So I think it'll be really important to get governance tokens multi-chain onto whatever cheaper alternatives there are, and to have that integrated with the governance modules to have some sort of trustless bridge that you can use to actually vote using tokens on, say, a layer two. Because I think that'll also make it a lot more inclusive of, you know, the smaller players that can't afford to use ETH mainnet.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I remember Balancer doing the gas subsidy for like any kind of interaction with the protocol on like the DeFi side, but actually having some sort of potential like DAOs compensate for gas subsidies in governance would also probably be a great initiative and a good use of DAO treasury as well. But I also think if you can like kind of go more to like L2 for voting, that's also a great way to like mitigate like lack of participation and just making the whole voting process easier. And that is one of the things that we're thinking about with our voting vault architecture, is having like an L1, L2 voting vault. So people can kind of use that as an option if they don't want to be like spending large amounts of gas to participate or delegate.
Thanks so much for having us on here. This conversation was awesome and really, really enlightening. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you everybody for coming. And good rest of your day.
Thanks everyone.
See you around, guys.
Bye everyone.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was The Good Governance Space, hosted by Commonwealth, recorded on Thursday, February 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Reading in a book, yo, I learned something nifty. The CIA was feeding people acid in the 50s. Some people knew it, most of them didn't. It was like a little game they invented. Sandoz had the plug, it was all about the research. Gotta get turned on, hollering me first. Government reaction is always kinda knee-jerk. Not exactly what I like to see out of my leaders. Send lunatics trying to see the other side. Everybody likes to hide and seek when the dose is high. Paranoid, like, people are watching me. Well, that's because people are watching, see? If DMT is the Niagara of epiphanous beauty, and psilocybin treats your mind like a movie, LSD wasn't the mind control they wanted, so they kept designing and different drugs to haunt us.
You are an explorer, and you represent our species. And the greatest good you can do is to bring back a new idea, because our world is endangered by the absence of good ideas. Our world is in crisis because of the absence of consciousness.
Just another night in the cabin, camping. Three drops hitting each tongue like, well, that happened. Feeling like a weird alien on this planet. I'm just passing through, staring at these inhabitants. They didn't know provocateurs infiltrating, lock your doors, trying to start a quiet riot so they could mop the floors. Used to slay the forage, waiting for the drum roll. And that's what happens when cutthroats get all the control. Acting all manic, the passion is frantic. The visuals are magic, so let your mind brandish this little weapon of mass dysfunction. Red Dawn down, now we're tripping with the Russians. Reading in a book, yo, I learned something nifty. The CIA was feeding people acid in the 50s. Some people knew it, most of them didn't. And you wonder why we harbor such resentment, dicks.
My notion of what the psychedelic experience is for is that we each must become like a fisherman and go out onto the dark ocean of mind and let your nets down into that sea. And what you're after is not some behemoth that will tear through your nets, follow them, and drag you and your little boat, you know, into the abyss. Nor are what we're looking for a bunch of sardines that can slip through your net and disappear. Ideas like, have you ever noticed that your little finger exactly fits your nostril? And stuff like
Terra Spaces.